And welcome back, Darren.
Welcome back, Jerry.
Did you get yourself a drink?
I did.
A little spot of tea?
Spot of tea? No.
Brilliant. Have you ever been to Narnia? I asked that just randomly. All right. Well, we just started talking about universal apps and what they mean to developers, what they mean to users, and what they mean to the store. It's not always the same. What it means to us is building an app that runs on two platforms. That's really what we're talking about inside the Microsoft ecosystem of Windows Phone and Windows.
Yep.
All right.
Sounds good.
Now, there's a lot of stuff to think about. Right now, we're going to talk about the code sharing strategies in sort of a deeper review of what we just went through.
Yeah, we kind of talked about the high level. Now this is getting to specifics.
And then I want to go in and actually demonstrate some of the techniques, I guess, you can use to share code across when you're using this new shared project. And it's real, right? It's real. It's going to be exciting. All right. We'll start here with code sharing strategies. And show code sharing strategies for us, Barry. Code sharing strategies. There we go. we're excited to be back with Barry. It doesn't feel like MVA without him.
Yeah, it's been minutes.
Fun little technical glitch going on back here.
Should we keep rolling?
Yeah.
Apparently there's a technical glitch.
There's a lot of chatter from the back. Notice that?
Absolutely.
Let's talk about types of sharing. All right. The first option developers have had for years and years and years is
Can we show the slide screen, guys?
Is the ability to... Hey, it's yes, human slave is... Mission is leaving. My leaving.
Okay, you're up.
All right. right, so the first one that we've had for a long time is the ability to share source code using linked files. Linked files just means I can have it, for example, here. I could have the file down in my web service. It's mydata.cs.
Yep.
And then I can have it also up in my other projects.
So yeah, so you would add a file, but there's a little option, a drop down on there to select shared file or link to file rather than to add a new file.
Boy, talk about something that's not easily discoverable. That is certainly hidden in that tiny little down arrow whenever you're adding an existing file. But it's there nonetheless, and it gives you what you want, and it's been there for a long time. Now, this is a nightmare because you could look at it kind of like this. Here's the super crazy way. We could have everything inside one project, and then everything is linked to the next project. Now, I don't know if I would recommend this just because this is really going to be a developer's nightmare in order to maintain and make sure you have all the links correct. Don't get me wrong, this works. You could absolutely do it this way. I don't think you'd want to show your peers and colleagues this for sake of laughter.
The reality was before we had things like PCL and so on, this was how you actually did it with a lot of the older school XAML-based technologies, sharing between Silverlight and WPF. Yeah. This was the approach that you had to use.
The patterns and practices actually recommended that you do it this way back in the day.
Yeah.
And, it worked. I think that's the best thing we can say about it right now.
It gave you the opportunity to fix a bug in one place and it would automatically be fixed elsewhere.
You might even be able to say that if you have one file that you need to share between projects, perhaps linked file really is a good solution for you. As soon as your project begins to look like this, you might start considering other approaches.
Yeah.
Yeah, or as soon as your solution starts to look like that. So we introduced shared projects just a minute ago, and shared projects allows us to reference a shared project and let MS Build behind the scenes move all those up into your project as if they're actually there. In a lot of ways, it's like linking every file. You get the same effect without having to maintain and make sure that everything is linked properly. You don't have to worry about whether or not you rename a file and it's no longer linked and you get different problems like that. It solves all of those problems for us. Really, really nice. And of course, we have that third option of creating that PCL where we can put, just as a reminder, you can put XAML inside the new PCL as well. And so you can really share out all your assets and resources just like you can with a shared project if that's the way that you want to do it. Sometimes there's just a reality to projects that you have to do it a certain way. And so it's just nice that, hey, we want to use shared projects, go for it. Hey, we have to use PCLs, go for it, and you get at least a similar capability. Perfect. So here they are all side by side, and it's really up to the developer to choose which one fits properly in the scenario they are. I like to give guidance to say, developers, this is the way you should do it. And I suppose the third one is the way you should do it unless you can't. Mm-hmm. But then you have all these other options, and each of them is as right as the next when it comes to that. So I would say default to the shared project, but don't forget you have all these other options if you need them. All right. Some things to consider, especially around linked files, is it's all manual. Don't dive in, don't jump in thinking it's all going to be great, because there can be some serious gotchas, especially around file renames and stuff like that. Remember, shared projects are basically MS Build behind the scenes, which is both awesome and gives you that caveat of there'll be some issues around code generation that we talked about before. If you have a T4 template inside your shared project, it won't render as it gets moved up into the head. Basically, I think the reason is the proj items is only for the TT. So the TT gets moved up, and all the generated files don't get moved up because they're no longer part of it. You can probably manually go in and monkey with it, but now you're just screwing stuff up.
Yeah.
And then finally, remember, portable class libraries, are, as appealing as they are, do introduce this almost problem of the lowest common denominator. It does mean some of the logic, some of the APIs, some of the SDKs that you use will not be usable inside the portable class library because they may not pertain to all the different targets. Is that the right word?
Exactly. You know, you won't be able to compile it, basically. Yeah, they won't be available within the PCL, so.
That's right. This is a worthwhile thing to say. This idea of technical debt, and technical debt has consequences. And so how would you define technical debt, Darren?
So it's generally the compromises that you make perhaps to achieve functionality within a certain time window, or you can't think of better of a way to do it at the moment, and it works, so let's move on to the next thing. Mm-hmm. So you kind of accrue this backlog of things that you wish to address at some point in the future. Some of that is actually not sitting down and really considering how you're going to structure your project solutions, how you're going to share that code between those various projects. Unless you've really thought that through, you could back yourself into a corner with some of those strategies. That's why I really do like the shared project approach, because it really removes a lot of that decision-making from you and turns around and says, this is the strategy I'm going to leverage.
That's right. You know, you might be watching this and thinking to yourself, man, there's a lot of decisions to make here. There's a lot of stuff
Actually,
I got to figure up. Yeah, do it up front. And the reality is those sorts of decisions are important, right? Skipping over those decisions, I can fix that later. I don't think that's important. I'll just move on from there. You were making it nice. You were like, yeah, okay, so you are trying to solve a problem, so you solve it this way. But sometimes it's just, I don't know if it's a matter of laziness, but it's just a matter of, you know, you just don't invest into your project to make it structured properly, to make all your reuse plan that you have ahead of time. And that just has a consequence, an expensive consequence, as it gets further down the line.
Yeah, especially in terms of code maintenance. I mean, that's where these things really come to bite you, is if you don't consider these things. It's great for a V1, you get it out, you ship it, and so on and so forth. And it's not always going to be you that's maintaining your code down the line. Somebody else has to come along behind. If there's no consistency to where elements are placed and what strategy you've used, you're mixing all these different types of strategies, then all of a sudden it becomes very difficult for somebody to actually maintain it.
Yeah, I think it's also I think it's also worth saying that this introduces some new pieces that you have to deal with that you wouldn't have to solve before. So now I have applications, or now I have code in multiple types of projects. And so there are strategies around that. In fact, let's move on to dealing with platform-specific code. And so we have platform...
It's pretty interesting, the survey responses.
Top of the morning to you, Darren. All right, so let's talk about platform-specific code. This is the code that you need to write, and it only runs on phone. Or the code that you need to write, and it only runs on Windows, but you still want to use a shared strategy? No problem. There are lots of different approaches we can do that. So if you think about it, for example, status bar, Darren, and the hardware back button. they are phone specific.
You really are multilingual, aren't you?
Well, I try and do what I can so I can bring in a little wider audience.
You speak idiot fluently.
I can't wait to read the transcript. I love that. All right. The status bar and the hardware back button are phone specific, but that doesn't mean you can't use them, and it doesn't mean you don't want to use them, right? Those are obviously very important. And they're just a beginning of what What are we going to do? How can we save this? And so let me pull up Visual Studio, if that's all right with you.
I think that makes sense.
Yeah. And
what better than Notepad in this scenario?
Start throwing together some stuff here. Yeah. I code in Visual Studio, just not online, right? I don't let people watch me do it. All right, so let me close out some stuff. You know what? I already have this project open, and if it's all right with you, I'm going to go ahead and use it. Let me see. Will it build all right? Yeah. All right, great. This is going to be the project.
Here's one you prepared earlier.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like just a few minutes ago. That's right. All right, so as you recall, I moved the main page down to the shared, so there's no other XAML in any of the other projects. And so I'll go into the code behind of main page here, and I want to start introducing some problems. And so I'll start by, let's do it right.
This is a general approach you have when you actually go to solution.
This is my natural style. All right, the first thing I do is delete all the comments.
Yeah, that's a nervous tick, isn't it?
It's just one of those things I do not like. There's no reason to have it. The other thing, well, I don't want to keep talking about that, so never mind. Let's do this properly. So the way I'm going to do it properly, I'm going to say this.dataContext equals new main page view model. Now, I'm not going to build out an entire MVVM framework here or anything, but I want to be able to have a separate class anyway so we can start using it that way. So I've got main page view model, and let me just implement it right here below it. So obviously, the best practice is to put individual classes in individual files. It just makes sense, right?
Yep.
You don't always see that because sometimes there's reasons to do it. For example, you're writing a demo.
Live,
right, yes. So you don't want to do a bunch of switching. All right, so I'll create a quick public class called main page view model, and now you can see I don't get the underline because I've got an actual class here. Now, the first thing I want to do inside my project is hide the status bar, and let me do that inside the constructor of main page view model, and I'll say, let me show you something. Up here in the top, I have this new context switcher, and I get this with linked files. So if I have the file in multiple projects, I can switch between the project that it's in and use the context of what's referenced inside that project. So I get the same thing here because, remember, a shared project is a lot like a linked file. And so I can see that this is referenced in both the Windows and the Windows Phone app. And so if I go to Windows right here, I get all of the references, meaning I can reference all the APIs specific to Windows and that are supported. And then I can go down to Windows Phone, and I get all the ones that are only for phone. So I can switch back and forth that way and get autocomplete and IntelliSense the way I like it. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to switch to phone because I'm going to build out just the capability of hiding the status bar. So S-T-A-T-U-S-B-A-R. Phew, that would have been embarrassing. All right, so here is the, I'll put it just like this, windows.ui.viewmanagement.statusbar. That's how I interact with it. And it doesn't do anything yet, that's why it's underlined in red. But I'll show you something interesting. When I mouse over it, Visual Studio gives me a little bit more information as well. Not only is it telling me all the IntelliSense stuff that I would actually want, but it's also telling me that, look, right there it says Windows 8.1 not available, Windows Phone 8.1 available. So it's already given me a warning in IntelliSense, but it's not stopping me from coding, right? That's what you want. Yeah. And so let's see, that would be git for current view. Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
A little
yield sign with an exclamation. Yeah, exactly. And again, that's saying, look, there are three things you can do with the status bar. One of them is not supported inside a phone. The reality is all of status bar is not supported, so that's kind of fun. In fact, if I were to back up and go to status bar, you can see there's a lot of things I can get in view management, and status bar is just one of the only supported on one. Now, that you would get the same warning if it was just for Windows and not, and you know, the other way as well, but this one's just for phone. All right, so let me just quickly get for that. I want to hide it async. Because it's asynchronous, I need to switch it to be synchronous just for this demo. You wouldn't actually do it like this, but I'll say as task dot, whoa, Betsy.
Don't do that.
What do you think this means? No thanks. I'll just say no thanks for now.
I would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you like to restart? No, not yet. I'm in a demo. Then I'll just say,
it's gone 10. Something might be being pushed.
That's a good point. MSIT strikes again. All right. They do a great job, by the way. I say that as if it's a joke, but they do a great job. All right.
Yeah. You have to say that because otherwise they will bring that machine down now.
They might be watching. All right. So, no problem. If I build this, by the way, and I'm about to, kaboom, I'm going to build it all out. And look, I get an error, but the only place I get an error is inside the Windows project because I'm using a I'm using an API that's not supported.
So you know, let's just step through. We talk about the build process, the build automation there. So it's copied those files into those two head projects.
Yes.
A head for Windows and a head for Windows Phone. The compiler compiling that source in the context of the Windows Phone says, hey, Nate, no problem whatsoever. The compiler in the context of the Windows head says, oh, I don't have a reference to this. This is going to be a problem.
And we trust the compiler to do this for us, right? It's actually helping.
It's a much better job than
we do.
You
don't want to put it in the store with status bar errors in it, right? We'd love that. All right, so I'm going to go to the project properties of Windows so I can show you something interesting. If you go to the build tab and look at conditional compilation symbols, these are predefined. They come right out of the template. And the one that I get for the Windows app is, conveniently, Windows app, Windows underscore app. So this is a compilation symbol that I get and I can use later. In fact, let me show you Windows Phone. I'll go to the properties of it and go to its build tab. I have the same thing, but it's not Windows app. It's Windows Phone app. So now I can use that as a inside my compilation directives. And let me show you how to implement those. So this will solve the problem quite quickly, I would say. Pound if is the
lowercase. Oh, IT is really insistent. Do not show that message.
Don't show this message again.
I think so.
That's really nice. Ever pressed a key and forgotten that it was on?
Oh, this is not IT. This is accessibility.
No thanks. It's really a nice option.
Click no thanks for crying out loud.
All right. This is not an MVA on Lenovo. All right. So remember, we have a compilation directive for phone and for Windows. And so the pound if brings us to use those. I'll say Windows underscore app. Remember, that was the one for Windows. Mm-hmm. Now everything, and I'll just drop this down and put a pound end if, right? That's the way the syntax is for this. And so now all of the code inside this if statement will be rolled up and compiled only for the Windows app. It will not be part of the Windows phone.
So in effect,
app.
What it's doing is telling the compiler, ignore the code between these pound if and pound end if. If this compiler
symbol
constant has not been set.
Right. And so obviously this is the opposite logic I would really want. And so let me just add an else if, or as they say, elif, inside the Windows phone app. All right, so now it does both, right? So I'll just go here and say Windows. And then if I look down here, I get the implementation. Now, watch when I build. Control-Shift-B. I'll wait for that to build, and I get two happy succeeds right here.
Yep.
Kind of like Chinese food. It's happy. And so if Windows Phone works great, because look, there's no APIs being run at all, so there's no code. And this is what gets shipped up to the Windows Phone head. Now, I'll tell you one cool thing. You can probably see that this is color highlighted, but this is a gray, where usually you're used to seeing kind of
green.
A green color.
Yeah.
And so I can go back up to this context switcher at the top, and I'll switch back to Windows. And now when you see it, it looks green, but now you can see it's grayed out, and that's because it's switching between those contexts where those symbols aren't defined. Windows underscore phone underscore app is not part of the Windows project.
Yep.
It's great for just from a visual, help the developer out sort of view.
It goes some steps towards making it a little bit more readable, but I think that's the point you're about to make.
I really am. Let me just show you something awesome. Let's say you had a couple of lines of code you needed to do this to, and all of a sudden you start backing these up side by side by side by side. All of a sudden, even though you get color highlighting, so I can go between Windows Phone and Windows, it's still a nightmare to just glance at and be able to consume this code. Now, it's maybe easy because we're only looking at, so let's say, 30 lines. You're like, I can kind of follow that, Jerry. But as soon as I put this inside a really large class, as soon as I have complicated logic, as soon as I have, you know, the structure of the code really changes between different ones. In fact,
yeah. If you want to switch over to my screen quickly, Barry. So this is a view of one of the controls that we actually have in the Solarizer app that we're going to talk about in a little while. And this is a common control that leverages a lot of the pound if directives. And as you can see, it actually starts to become very challenging to go through and see all the flow and exactly what code is in scope as you move scroll through it. So it starts to become very, very challenging. You know, you can switch backwards and forwards between the various constants, and you can see these things graying out. But it gets in the way of you really comprehending what's going on.
Yeah. So you have this idea of pre-compilation directives, and they do solve the problem, but in short order, they start becoming almost a problem of their own.
Yep. And we'll come back to this one later.
Okay.
Switch back to Jerry, please.
All right, I'm going to clean this up a little. And so using pre-compilation directives is one way to solve this problem. But there's a handful of ways. Let me go to the next one. And the next one would be, what if the view model was not in the shared project at all? So let's start with that. I'm going to take this view model, and I am going to, I'll cut it. We'll make it only up in the Windows Phone project. So I'll add a quick class, and we'll call it main page view model. And I'll paste the code that we just had, right? And so it's the same namespace and stuff, so this should be actually pretty easy. So
you just copied the constructor.
I missed the class, didn't I? Well, that's all right. The class was just there.
Yep, just paste it inside.
All right, Butimus. All right. So
it was as if you planned it.
It's like I planned it that way. It's almost like we went through this. But
just a few hours ago.
It's so true. We wanted to make sure this worked because there's a lot to kind of communicate here. All right, so now when I try and build it, in fact, let me go back. I want to delete the class out of shared altogether. And let me put these side by side so we can look at them. So here's the page class, and here's the view model over in phone. I'll put a little comment so we can know that we're looking at phone because that can be a little confusing. I'll go ahead and build. And what do you think will happen?
I think it's going to be an opportunity to excel.
I think, yes, that's right. We can always get better. All right, so it works perfectly for the phone, right? Because we've put that class in the phone. It's trying to call the view model, but it doesn't exist in Windows. So now there's an error. And so let me drag it up so that we have both in both projects. Now when I build, I get almost the same error because I'm trying to use status bar. So I can go over in phone or into Windows now, and I can take this out. Let me change this so we can see that we're looking at Windows. And I can take this, I'll comment it out for now, even though obviously we wouldn't do it at all. In fact, let me put all of them side by side. So then we can really, I don't need to look at the files anymore. So here's the shared over on the left, and then phone and Windows right here. Now if I build, it'll build really happy. 1, 2, right there, no problem at all. It said one succeeded, but that's because phone worked last time, so it didn't need to rebuild it. And all right, so this is another strategy. What if the things that we reference are actually not shared at all? No problem at all. You can totally do it that way.
Yep.
But there are other things that you do want to share. So let's pretend I have main page view model, right? Page view model. And a lot of the code, for example, void go, and we'll also have do. Go and do are really important methods.
Apparently so.
And the reality is the logic in those is big and it's completely universal.
I mean, I can see there's multiple lines.
Yeah.
It's a typical value you contribute.
This is the way I contribute right here. To do. There we go.
Checked in, ship it.
And, but nonetheless, you know, I mean, why would I duplicate this code in both phone and Windows Phone? Because now when I find...
it literally seconds to put that in.
Well, when I find there's an error, I fix the error then in phone, I have to remember then to synchronize that fix in the exact same redundant code that I have there. What I'd really like to do is make it so that I could just declare kind of a partial code across all of them.
I see what you did there.
See what I did? That's pretty great.
Yeah, that's almost foreshadowing.
Yeah, it's pretty great. Look, I accidentally put it inside the main page. I'm going to back this over here so it's not in the scope of the page, but in the scope of the project. Let me make sure I didn't break anything by doing that. Totally broke it by doing that. How did I? You know why I broke it?
Yeah, because it's conflicting.
Because it's conflicting. I can't have a class defined here and a class defined here because when MS Build pulls that class up, now there's two, and it doesn't know which one is which.
Yeah.
So what I really need to do is so I can use a construct C# introduced to us, just C# 4, actually. It's a long time ago. That allows us to define one class in multiple files. So, partial. A part of the class is defined here, a part of the class is defined here, and because this is going to be a separate context, we don't have to do this right now, but a part of the class is there. So really, this and this get combined, or this and this get combined, depending on which head project is building.
Yep.
And so this is great because now I still get the constructor operation when I am in phone, and I still get the constructor operation when I am in Windows.
Yep.
But I still have the shared project over here, or the shared logic inside my class here. So I'll say Control Shift B, everything's happy when it builds. So there's another way to share code, right? I can use partial classes as well. What's the other way to do it?
Base classes.
Base classes, that's exactly right. What if this isn't the approach that you want? What if instead what you need to do is make it so that it's defined in one location? Now you would, base classes are extremely important when you're using PCLs because you can't have partial classes that go across
assembly boundaries.
Assembly boundaries, right, yeah. They're completely out of scope. And so this is kind of a very common scenario you might do. So I'll change this in the, I'll leave it as partial because it won't really matter. I'm going to take partial away just so we don't think about it anymore. So we're still going to have, of course, this error because of the conflict, but I'll rename the shared project or the shared class into main page view model base. Right? And so this is now going to become an abstract class, and the abstract class is going to be inherited by the head class. So here I've got main page view model, here I've got main page view model base. It's not automatic that they would inherit, of course. So I'll add the inheritance right here. So now all the functionality, that's go and do, are all now part of main page view model because they inherit that from the base class, the abstract base class. Mm-hmm. You might be thinking, wow, I wish I knew more about this partial class business. Wow, I wish I knew more about this inheritance stuff. And it just so happens that two really great guys
waxed lyrical about this very subject.
On and on they went in an MVA dedicated to the foundation principles and parts of C Sharp. What was it actually called?
Fundamentals of C Sharp.
Fundamentals of C Sharp, yeah. So there's if you're on this, you're like, man, I wish they would talk more about it. We did.
Yeah, and you'd certainly make sure that you implemented the base on the Windows side as well as the phone.
Yep, so I'll go over, that's a great point. I'll go over to the Windows side, add its reference as well. Now, this class has all the functionality of both what's here and what's here. Same thing with phone. So that's a beautiful way to do it. But let's go back to partials for a second. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to change this so it's no longer in the constructor. This is going to be called the void setup. And I'll do the same thing over here. Void setup. And it's whatever it is you need to do that's specific to that platform. That's why you have it over. So the setup really is different. I need to call that setup, right? And so I need to call it and make sure it's called at the time of constructor. Right? So here's my constructor. And the base class is going to call setup. Now, this is not going to work because the base class has no idea about the concrete class that inherits it.
Yep.
How would you solve this problem?
Oh, there are so many ways. The way that I would solve this were I, if I made the assumption that this would not need to be implemented in some of the derived classes, then I would declare a partial method. If, however, I knew that the implementation needed to exist in both of the derived classes, then I would declare the method abstract on the base class, thereby enforcing that it was implemented in the
So let me show both of those, because that's a really great point. I'm going to go in and I'm going to define the method, but not implement the method and make it abstract. So I'll say it's a public abstract void setup. Now what's beautiful now is, look, this error is going to go away because the base class now knows there's a setup method, mm-hmm. but it doesn't know anything about it yet. What's beautiful also is, if I were to try and rename this one, let's say to Darren, like so, Darren. Then I would get a build error saying, you have not overridden the setup. And so now, I'll leave Darren there for a second and show.
Well, it's not overridden in this scenario, is you've not implemented.
Oh, it's an abstract project.
Exactly.
That's not overriding?
No.
You don't override abstracts?
Nope, you implement them. If you had a base implementation, then an override replaces that base implementation.
We'll look back at this moment. With a discussion. All right, very good. So I'll use the override keyword to find the abstract method that I'm going to implement, and for the sake of discussion, and I'll select it, and it'll stub in what it knows that I need. So see, it's named it setup. It's also given it the void signature that is already defined over here in the base class. Now I go in, and I say whatever it is that the phone needs to have. And now it's implemented properly, and it allows the base class to push out signatures and push out the interface that it wants anything that inherits it to use. That's option number one. Mm-hmm. And I actually like that quite a bit.
Yeah.
The downside to it is it must be implemented.
Exactly. So even if that means that there's an empty body, mm-hmm. then you've got to have it sitting there in your class.
Right, right. Now, I could switch this over to virtual, and you might think that somehow fixes it, but it actually doesn't, because virtual still has to be implemented somewhere.
Yep.
And so in this case, it would have to be implemented in the base class. All right, so let's change all this around. So by the way, I would have to implement override void is here as well. Mm-hmm. And so let's back this out and also rename it back from Darren to setup, because now we're going to do something very cool. So earlier we were talking about partial classes. That's your ability to define a class, a single class in multiple files. Now I want to talk about partial methods. And so a partial method is...
It's more of a compiler trick than it really is object orientation.
That's right. And they can. There's a couple things about it. It must be private, mm-hmm. and it also must be void.
Yep.
So everything else, you can do anything you need to. So I'll just show you the syntax. It's just like this: a partial void, and I didn't put private because it's assumed, but private partial void setup. Now the base class says there. It doesn't say there is a method called setup.
Yeah, it says there could be.
It says, yes, there might just be a method called setup, and if it is, I can use it. And so right here, I'm able to call setup, but the compiler looks at the time of compilation, and if there is no method, because it's partial, which makes it almost optional, it would have been a better name, to call it mm-hmm. optional. Now, there's an optional method of setup. If it's not there, it just drops the call to it.
Yeah, so the advantage of this over having something declared abstract and implemented empty is there's absolutely no waste of time in terms of IL, intermediate language mm-hmm. code that's generated by the compiler to invoke these things. Now, you can certainly make an argument that the optimizer, when you're in release mode with all the optimization and so on and so forth, probably would drop that code if there was an empty body in a function call anyway. But this actually allows you from an architectural perspective to specify whether you see these as potential extension points, but you're not going to put the overhead into your infrastructure just to support the perhaps you want to call before property changed and after property changed. Mm-hmm. If you implement those as partials, then it's up to somebody whether they implement them in the deriving class.
Yeah. To be honest, so this is inside the constructor. Perhaps the most practical thing that we've done, and you'll see this in our Solarizer code, is we don't call setup, we call partial constructor, mm-hmm. because there are things you need to do at time of instantiation
yeah.
that's only for the phone.
And of course, this only works inside partial classes as opposed to abstracts and bases.
Right. Now, this wouldn't work, by the way, until I made one quick change. It's not, remember, it can't be public, it has to be private, but it also needs to be marked as partial. So I'll need to do this on both of them. And now what's beautiful is this says there's an optional method here we might have in all of our inherited class. And so here we have it right here. So Control-Shift-B, and it's an error because it doesn't actually work, does it?
No, you've got to be in a partial class.
It's got to be in a partial class to use a partial method.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I meant to show partial methods while I was in partial classes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would delete the empty partial over in the Windows project, just to illustrate the point that you don't have to have it there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Let me change all this to be, there we are, delete. So it's... Unfortunately, I would have demoed this in the previous step, but did them just a hair out of
the class.
So now they are, if they're all partial classes, then they can have partial methods as well, right?
Yep.
You know why you do this? I believe it was really invented for code generation, mm-hmm. where you build it in one file, but you let implementation and customization be in another file.
Yeah, but it's a scenario that works very well in this shared solution.
Yep. And... What was the error? A partial method cannot have access modifier.
Yeah, you just get rid of the private.
I was trying to be so literal. All right.
Hooray!
Two happy builds right there. Remember, partial class means it doesn't have to be implemented. So look, I'll go over to the partial implementation in Windows, delete it completely, try to build again, no problem, right? Because it really means optional. All right, great.
Remember, children, live demos hurt.
Hey, that went all right, right? We're just a hair out of order, but it, that's great. All right, let's think about this from a rule of thumb point of view, right? All of these are different options, and each of them will introduce a level of complexity to your code. There's no getting around it, but each of them tries to deal with these platform-specific APIs and the code that you're writing specific to the phone. So the first one is compilation directives. So that is the pound if that we showed. And so there's a pound if Windows Phone, there's a pound if Windows App, there's a pound if Windows App and a pound if Windows Phone app. There we go.
Yeah, easy for you to say.
Predefined for you. And honestly, for those small quick hit platform problems, it really is pretty great, right? Because it just takes care of a line or a handful of lines and allows you to keep everything in a file otherwise. However,
classic example is the hardware back button support. You know, it's a couple of lines that you put in your app.xaml.
Yep, that's right. And it could be that that's your easy solution, but as soon as you start seeing it repeating, as soon as you start seeing it recurring many, many times throughout your project or throughout a single class especially, you may have gone down a difficult path for the maintenance developer coming behind you. And honestly, even for you, in three more weeks when you're trying to look at this class and remember what it was you were trying to accomplish. So,
yeah. And I did misspeak there. I meant the app.xaml code behind, not the app.xaml. Because right. The pound if directives do not work in XAML.
That's a good thing to say.
Because it's kind of like a segue.
Yes, that's exactly right. It's like a segue. A lot of fun segues are. We also have partial classes. Partial classes allow us to define one class over multiple files. Very nice. Very, very, very nice. Then we have base classes as well where we showed off inheritance. So you can have all of the work that you need to do as well as forcing implementation with abstract methods. All right. So that's sharing code, and you kind of led into it just a little bit. There's no pound if directive, so there's got to be approach to sharing XAML as well. And this is obviously we're talking about XAML applications, so let's think about it. There are three core strategies to sharing your XAML when you're building a universal application. The first one is adaptive nirvana. I made that word up. Adaptive Nirvana.
Sounds like an album.
It does, doesn't it? It smells like an album, right? And that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Bam!
See what I did?
Peanut Gallery is now groaning.
So, this is the most reuse and the least likely, right? That's the reason I say Nirvana, because it's probably not very realistic. And it's the idea that you will not have to write platform-specific XAML at all. Congratulations, and it's really a pain. So strategies that we just showed for C# code do not apply to XAML. And so you're gonna have to think this through. Anyway, so the first one would be, I have my three projects. I have my Windows 8, I have my phone, Windows, and my shared, and there's nothing in those at all. Right, really nice. The second one is, more usable for sure, is where the XAML that we use, we are very careful not to use controls that are specific to one platform, not to use a functionality that's specific to one platform. And this is really full of compromise, right? Where we're like, hey, let's do this. Well, the phone doesn't support it. Okay, let's drop that, right? So this is really full of compromise, but you solve it typically by using using the same control and then just applying unique styling to each control. So you need the font to be a slightly different size on phone than it is on Windows. Great. Go ahead and set that up inside your dictionary that's specific to your phone. You need for the font family to change. Maybe the padding around something changes. All those things can be manipulated per platform just by having a resource dictionary.
Yeah, like Sego UI, Sego UI WP for Windows Phone, and so on and so forth, if you want to be specific.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Then the third one, and this is probably going to be the most likely scenario that you choose, is going to be where some things are shared, some things aren't shared. I mean, it's weird. It's almost like saying the middle road is the way you're going to go. But that really is where we're headed right now, because there are only so many things you can do with XAML. And so if you go to the far left where you're like, I have to be able to reuse all my XAML, there are going to be compromises. And so you don't want to make it so that you allow the user experience to be what gives.
That's the key assumption that we're making here when we're talking about that. You know, why do we share XAML? I mean, it's a great talking point. to be honest, a lot of this sharing is really about making the developer story easier.
That's right. The user doesn't know you're sharing your Xamarin or not.
Yeah, the user does not care. Maybe they care in terms of the end price because you may be, your pricing strategy may be dictated by how much work you spent developing the product, although reality is the market is pushing everything to be free within app purchases these days. So most of these are really around developer productivity. So we need to be careful when we're making those choices about what's easy for us sitting there driving in Visual Studio, that those that ease of use from our perspective is not compromising the end user experience of using the applications. Because our point is to sell apps or to provide apps that people want to use. And if we don't do that, but it was really easy for us to build, what have we gained?
Right. And if your app is really difficult to build, but it's successful, that's awesome.
Yeah.
It's not a loss. It's not a zero-sum game.
Exactly.
It's
not a zero-sum game. If ease of use was the determining factor for what platform was being successful, iOS and Objective-C would not be top of the tree in that perspective.
Yeah.
They're not easy to use.
All right. So great talking point. You're right. Why do we do this? This is for us. This is for developers. This is not for users. So don't sacrifice the user on the altar of sharing XAML. Mm-hmm. Basically. You like that?
Yeah. Do you want to keep stretching that further?
I wanted to show you this. Look at this.
Oh, no. No. Now you're
legend.
In trouble. Now you're in trouble.
Legend. All right. I poured Coke all over the keyboard.
And that is why you're a legend.
Yeah. What is the legend exactly? All right. Let me open up Visual Studio again, if you don't mind. And let's talk about just how we might solve this with a style. And so platform-specific styles, that was the middle, or that was the, I don't remember which one was in the diagram. But
that was the middle one, yes.
Yeah, but I think you would really, oh, let me do the demo first. I think you would really see this mixture of opportunity here. So let me, here's Visual Studio. You know what? I can absolutely use this project. Yeah. This is fantastic.
It's almost as
really
if it was
worked
planned.
Out.
Let's make sure it builds first.
We should agree on whether or not we pretend like we planned it or not before we do it. Because you're like, it's almost, you know, it's like we planned. I'm like, wow. All right, anyway. All right, so here
I am.
I'm
giving you the benefit of doubt.
Yeah.
Nobody else is. We should have a survey. Should I be giving him the benefit of the doubt?
So
than the damn survey that's out there right
text
now.
Text block. I'm just going to have a hello, Narnia. Right? That's great. Look, it uses Narnia text. No. Hello, Narnia. There we go.
It's a lot funnier if you spell it right.
It is fun. Hello, Universal App. We'll just do it like that because I just feel bad doing it. Now to make it nice and big, I'm gonna just change the style real quick to the static header style. Look how I like to type XAML instead of using the designer. I'm always saying the designer can totally do it now, mm-hmm. and yet I find myself right here doing it. Right?
Yeah.
It's funny. It's just hard to break habits like that. Okay. Now here is something that's really unique to phone, and it has actually been resolved for you, but I want to show you anyway. So I'm going to go into phone here, and I'm going to pick this text box. And there I am. Text block, sorry. Text block, yeah, that's what I mean to say. And I'm going to go over to its properties, and you'll see that, well, before I do, you'll see that the context that I'm in right now is Windows Phone. Remember, you can switch back between mm-hmm. the two of them. And I'm going to apply a color to the text here. So see here, I'm turning it red, and I can change it to be green. Why didn't it update, I wonder? Did I lose the selection? Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, you started breaking things up. Look at how
it's because
it created runs for you.
Yeah. Let me back that out a little bit. This would not happen, by the way, if I hadn't tried to put it as raw content. If I had to put it as the text property, it wouldn't try and break it up for me. In fact, I'm going to do it so it doesn't monkey with me anymore. There we go. All right. So I'm going back to the properties of my text block. And you can see that it's turned green because I'm changing the color. But I don't want to actually set the color explicitly. I want to use a resource that is made special just for Windows Phone.
Mm-hmm.
And so the resource tab is over here, right? So I can do it as no color, a solid color, a gradient color. I can use a picture to fill it, which would be crazy. Or I could use a resource here. And so I'm going to go down.
Would it be crazy or would it be awesome?
It would be awesome. Chris, it would be awesome. Chris, wake up, Chris. The poor guy. The phone, I'm going to go to right here. No, not there. Phone accent brush, there it is. So I'm going to select the phone access brush. Whenever you go into Windows Phone, one of the things you can do is go into the system settings and set your own personal accent.
You can make the experience your own.
Yeah.
You get as long as your experience happens to be within the set palette of colors that are made available to you.
That's right. Well, fortunately, there is pink. My daughters are pleased to make theirs pink every time. And so I'll go into the phone accent brush. And as soon as I do, by default, the phone accent brush is blue, right? So I can go into the device panel here. And if I want to see the experience as if I were my daughter's, I could switch it over to pink. And you can see it updates there because what's really happening is all the theme is being changed. In fact, let me show you something really interesting. If you were to look at the XAML and see how foreground is set up for you here, and it goes to phone accent brush, basically did the same thing you would have done otherwise. I can hit F4 in here inside Visual Studio, F12 actually. F4 takes me to properties, F12 takes me to go to definition. I'll go ahead and hit F12, and this is pretty cool. It navigates me to the generic XAML. You can see where it is. This is what ships with Visual Studio. This is what ships with Windows and gets injected into apps. And that's important because as it's injected into the app theme resources all change. And so, but look, it's already highlighted it for me. Here's the phone accent color. It gets set by this, and that's how it's defined. I'm going to copy that into the clipboard for later use.
Oh.
All right. So what I want for users to experience is whatever color they want when they're on the phone. Now I'm going to change it so I'm no longer looking at it from the phone. I'll use the context switcher right here, and I'm going to switch now up to tablet. And so now when I bring up tablet, you'll see that it's actually changed. And even though it's calling out to that resource brush or that resource, it's just painting it white because there's no such thing as a color shared in Windows, right? It's just one of those things that hasn't been converged yet. And so you can even see there's a little underline that's kind of warning me, hey, this can't be resolved. And if I tried to run the app, I would actually get an error. And so the easiest solution to this is to fake the style. And I know that seems crazy, but it's a real simple implementation. And so let me kind of demo it to you. So here I am inside my Windows project, and I'm going to create a quick new file, and it's going to be a resource dictionary. And for the sake of convention, we'll say, I'll call it platform. And so this is basically all of the phone platform styles that I want to have used in Windows. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And so I'll just paste the one that we saw before. Now remember, since there's no such thing as this color, and this happens to lots of things, by the way, there are certain types of styles, like with the back button, that only exist in Windows, and you have to do this then over on the phone. And so in this case, it's always going to be, let's say, lime. And so now the users who come to us on Windows, they see the header is lime. When they come to us on phone, they see whatever they've set up to be custom, right? So this allows us to at least handle this properly while still giving that full functionality in our phone app. Now, the reality is we have not merged this into our, this is unused. It's like a CSS file inside a web application, but it doesn't have a link.
Exactly. We've defined the resources, but we haven't integrated the resources into the dictionary in use.
Right. So because AppXAML represents the global scope, right here is where we would add the link into that resource. As soon as I try to do it, it would fail because it's looking for it both times. It's looking for it in the Windows project. It's looking for it in the phone project. So for the sake of interest, I'll take this platform and I'll copy it down into phone so that it'll work on both of them. But because I don't want it to clash, I'm just going to remove this altogether because I know that the phone accent brush is already defined inside Windows Phone. Mm-hmm. But this is where I would go and start putting things that are specific to Windows, such as the back button and things like that. So here I am in the global application scope here. And the syntax for linking to a file actually is just a little bit tricky, right? Mm-hmm. I could do it. You could do it. Everybody could do it. But in order to get it right the first time, the easiest way, I think, is to pull this up in Blend.
Yeah. And so use some tooling to make sure that we don't make mistakes.
Right. So I'll go ahead and right-click the XAML file and let Blend open. Of course, Blend will open the entire solution. It's not a file editor. It's a project editor, right? And so look at that. I haven't even opened it up, apparently. I didn't join the experience. That's all right. All right, so as a tip to the developer out there, I opened up the main page XAML file. I right-click the main page XAML file. I didn't right-click another file. Mm-hmm. If you do that, if you don't do that, Blend won't actually bring into context all of the stuff that you want to do. So pick your smallest XAML file and do that if you're about to do it. So it's kind of anticipating what I'm about to do, so I'm going to cancel this out because I want to do it over here in the Resources tab so you can see what's going on. So look, you can see that the font is still white. That's because we haven't brought that into scope. It means it's not defined. So I'm going to, you can see here's my platform XAML, and I've defined it as Lime. So you can go ahead and see it in the right context. They just like in Windows, I can switch between the context. The way you do it inside Blend is you go to the Device tab and you switch right here. But I'm going to leave it as Windows, and I want to make a reference now to AppXAML, which is the global scope, and I want platform to be linked to it. So I just right-click AppXAML and say link to resource dictionary, and there it lists all the ones that it could be linked to, and so I'll go ahead and click platform. Now as soon as I do, I can open it up, and I can see it now it's linked to platform, and it didn't update it for me, which is kind of a bummer. I have to do a quick build in order to see it, but if I were to open and close the XAML file, you'd see it as well. What's beautiful now is all the changes I make here will get rolled to every page. So I can start using phone-specific styles and not worry about them not being found whenever I'm on the tablet. Pretty handy.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. I'll show you a little nice trick here. It adds all the syntax. I could have typed that, but if you're like, I can't remember that syntax, don't worry, Blend to the rescue. Beautiful. All right, so this is solving what if I am able to reuse a lot of XAML, but I just have these conflicts of styles. One thing you can do is create platform-specific style resource dictionaries and put them in each of the head projects.
Yeah. What are some other approaches?
Another one is to create visibility styles as well. So I might still have a platform-specific kind of a platform XAML resource dictionary, but I would have visibility visible in phone and visible in Windows, and they would be switched, toggled back and forth depending on which head you were in. That allows me to have, you know, in Windows, I want to make sure I have a nice header, or maybe I want to have a hero image on my hub. No problem. I just mark that to be visible when Windows, and it's visible, and I switch over to the phone, and it's gone. Mm-hmm. Right? That's really nice. So this is a simple way to do it.
And we need to remember that when we mark something as collapse, it doesn't take up any real estate in your presentation, and it's quite an optimized scenario.
That's right. It doesn't take up render time either.
Yeah.
So it truly is. All right. So there is kind of a reality check I think you and I should acknowledge.
Yeah. We're talking about sharing code and so on and so forth, and there's the implication that the reason we want to share code is it saves time.
Yeah.
It saves a lot of activity. There is a reality when it comes to writing XAML, mm-hmm. and that is you're not going to save a huge amount of time mm-hmm. in this scenario because you need to think through all of these situations in which that XAML is going to be rendered on these different devices and so on and so forth. And you may well have, and we'll come on to this in a later topic, you may well have designs that actually propose a different experience for each of the platforms.
That's right.
And so the reality is your XAML, which is very much your view orientation of code, is going to be unique. There's going to be a lot of unique facets for each of those device platforms and so on. And so don't expect to be saving a bunch of time writing the XAML.
That's right. Now, having said that, you will save time after the fact. So you go in and you're like, I totally made my text white on a white background. I can go and fix that. And because of the way you're doing XAML, hopefully that will be able to resolve it on multiple platforms at the same time. But we're not doing this to save time. This is truly, we're doing this to build an awesome user experience.
Yeah.
Do expect to save time writing your implementation code. That's what
Absolutely.
We showed in sharing all the C#, right? Building out partial classes or building out base classes or something like that, right? All of those pieces really are a code save or a development saving when I only have to create one.
Especially if you take the time to consider how you wish to write that code, what approach you want to take for sharing that code, how you want to structure everything. You know, if you don't think about that pretty clearly from the outset, then you might end up with a bunch of rework and refactoring anyway to achieve the organization that you want down the line.
Let's end this module with a developer tip. And I think this is just, this is not the direction most developers naturally go, but it certainly is something that's going to help them quite a bit, right?
Yeah.
And it's the idea of keeping your projects in sync, because you're going to have two projects.
Yes. It's a natural human tendency. If you're used to building Windows Store apps, you're going to start up your universal project, and you're going to go out and hit hard and implement your Windows Store version of the universal project. And then you're going to turn around and go, okay, now I'm going to spend 10 minutes and bring my phone up because I'm sharing everything. Oh, shoot, I didn't think this through properly.
I appreciate you saying it that way.
I do.
So do I.
So does everybody. I didn't think this through properly, and now I have a lot of challenges I've created for myself in the way that I've architected my Windows Store app that I need to refactor that, change a bunch of things around. Whereas if I'd been moving forward, sort of move it a little bit forward here, move a little bit forward there, think about this problem in the context of both devices and both experiences, and come up with a better common solution that may have a different view on it, but is got the same underlying source, which may be reading from services, maybe doing business logic validations, and so on and so forth. If you think about those things as you move forward, you'll have a lot less rework.
Yeah. Just to translate what you just said,
as
you do it on Windows, do it on phone. As you do it on phone, do it on Windows. Keep those babies together. Don't allow it to get off, because then you're going to find you're going to have to redo things.
Yeah.
All right, so just a quick recap of the module we just went through. We talked about code sharing strategies. That's specific to your C# code, you know, the things that are given to you through not just the shared projects, but also mechanisms inside C# like partial classes and things like that. We also talked about how to handle some platform-specific code. Well, I guess those are kind of the same thing, right?
Yep.
And we talked about sharing XAML as well and some of the tricks with sharing XAML. You know what we didn't mention? And we were thinking about talking about this was another way to share XAML is through user control. You know what
I
mean? Because what you might do is reference a user control that is actually defined in both heads. Mm-hmm. That's a possibility as well.
Absolutely.
Works like a charm.
It does. It does.
And all of these introduce complexity. It's just decisions that developers get to make, like you, whether or not you make your application easy next month.
Yeah.
That's the issue.
I mean, really, there is no silver bullet that's going to solve every scenario that you're going to encounter. But what this the universal project types give you, and these strategies that we've discussed, they give you a starting point. They give you some templates that you can turn around and say, okay, that I believe is going to be the best solution for me, knowing the problems that I've got to encounter.
Yep. All right, that's it for this module. Thanks for hanging out with us and talking about all the strategies in order to share your code across different projects. We're going to come back in about 10 minutes, and we'll talk about 34% of them think you're from Australia.
It's quite disappointing, really. But at least 38%...
15% think New Zealand. So yeah. That is... I mean, that's
what's even more disturbing is 19% think Narnia.
Well, they've only seen the movie. You sound just like
exactly,
it, right?
Exactly. Well,
that's
ridiculous. What's that? 33%? Goodness, you were correct. The 33%.
We will see you in 10 minutes.